This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hello, audio friends. Well, as the saying goes, it's the most wonderful time of the podcasting year. To help you prep for the holidays, we've got a great show coming up today. You know that Yule log that everyone loves to watch burning over the holidays? It airs on Shaw Cable TV. Well, the popular tradition is getting some new spark. We'll have that for you. But first, we're going to sit down with Winnipeg's new chief of police. I'm Marcy Marcusa. This is Manitoba This Week. Well, Winnipeg's new police chief is now officially on the job. He was sworn in this week by Manitoba Chief Justice Raymond Wyant.
I, Robert Keith McCaskill.
I, Robert Keith McCaskill.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
To the best of my power.
To the best of my power.
Cause the peace to be kept.
Cause the peace to be kept.
And preserved.
And preserved.
And will prevent.
And will prevent.
All offenses.
All offenses.
Against the person and properties.
Against the person and properties.
Of Her Majesty's subjects.
Of Her Majesty's subjects.
That's a pretty tall order. Well, Terry McLeod and I sat down with Chief McCaskill on his first full day on the job.
Were your knees knocking a little bit? But hearing that from Justice Wyant?
Well, you know, I've got a lot of respect for Ray Wyant, and it was a pleasure to have him there to swear me in. It was I know it's a tall order. It's a huge responsibility, but I've said before that it's not only my responsibility. I'm part of the organization. We've got over 1,500 people that are going to be doing things, and they do it well. And so I'm sharing that responsibility with a lot of people.
What is your biggest challenge as chief of police?
Well, there's a lot of challenges. You know, I think one of the things that we really have to do is start developing better relationships, not only throughout the service, but throughout the community, various groups that are very interested in what the police have to do. I think if you start developing relationships and developing communication strategies, rather, and speaking with people, that relationship will start to be built, and we'll be able to do a lot of positive things. I think that's not necessarily a challenge. It's something that we have to do no matter what. Other things that we really have to accomplish, we have to increase the morale in the police service, and I think that started now. I'll be getting out and talking to members regularly. I'll be getting out and talking to the community so they have that ability to speak to their police service. We've got to be able to respond in a more effective way to citizens' complaints. So there's a number of different things that we've got challenges for, and we're going to do it.
What tells you that morale is an issue?
Well, you know, just from talking to people, it was, you know, for a lot of different reasons. I won't get into that, but I think it's important that members of the service are listened to, are part of the decision-making process to a degree. The frontline officers know what should be fixed on the police service. I've been speaking to them for a number of months, and I'll continue to do that. I think they have to be supported, and I will be doing that a lot publicly. When officers, quite often, because of the nature of the job, they do get criticized quite a bit generally, and I think that most officers are doing the best they possibly can, and when mistakes are made, because we're all going to make them, I'll be there to support them.
Now, speaking of the challenges of communication, one thing that our listeners told us a few weeks ago when we were asking about the issue of response time, we got many calls from people saying, the police did not come fast enough when I called, when I had my own need. What do you do about response times?
Well, I think it's one of the things that I'm convinced of is that there's a lot of calls that we're attending that we could perhaps provide advice over the phone, and we really have to look at that and how we can cut down the calls that we're actually responding to. If you can do that, you can respond to other calls faster. It's not going to be a simple process. It's going to take a period of time, but I've talked to a lot of officers and other people indicating that we shouldn't have attended this call, we shouldn't have attended that call, we could have provided appropriate advice over the phone, because in effect we have to tell the people what we can do and what we can't do, and we have to be better at handling those calls that they really need us. And I'm talking about property calls as well. You know, it's difficult for people to accept when they have a break and enter, for instance, and it takes several days for us to get there. But under the current situation, because of the workload and the calls for service, it's not possible to get there sooner. So we've got to work on that to get better service for the public that we serve.
Now, one issue that came up recently from the Manitoba Human Rights Commission, their report when they went around and talked to people who live in the core, and it said Aboriginal and African-American people say that they've been abused by police, either physically or sexually abused. They told the commission this. It's also said that these communities are afraid of the police. What do you do? well, to mend this?
Well, I think, as I said before, communication is important. I'll be getting out and talking to all the groups. I've got, there's obviously concern over the report. Anytime there's allegations of criminal behavior on the part of the police, every police officer wants that to be looked at and investigated properly. The concern I have over the report, these are anonymous complaints and put out there almost as fact. And that's a very difficult thing for me to accept. I think we have to encourage people, if they have a complaint, to come forth, because these things have to be investigated. But putting in a report anonymously, it just sort of sits there almost as fact, and you can't accept it as fact. But I would encourage anybody that has a complaint against police officers to come forward, and we're going to investigate those things. That's the one concern I have of the report. I haven't been briefed from the people that wrote it. I'm certainly going to be speaking to them about that. I think we have to have a better information flow between that group and others. But I mean, like I said, I'm very concerned about the allegations that are anonymous.
What would constitute success for you, Keith McCaskill, in this job? We talk about what the city needs, what the force is at, what the challenges are. But when you looked at taking this job, what do you want to do?
Well, I want to make the police service more accessible to the public. I want the police officers to deal with the public on a constant basis. And I think most officers want to do it, but they don't have time because they're going call to call to call. In an ideal world, we'd be able to have police officers where they need to be at that time. Now, it's not an ideal world, but we're going to work as much as possible to get a better service for the public. And
Where do you start?
Well, like I said, what you first start is you improve morale, and that's what I've been working on for the last number of weeks, and I'm going to continue to do that. The second thing, you start talking to the community and what they want and what we can do right now and what we can't. If you have an understanding of what you can and can't do, and they understand where we're coming from, I think that's going to be a better situation where they can accept it. And then we start working at trying to make us better. But you got to be honest with people. You got to be straightforward. And I want to get honest reaction from the public as well. That's where we start.
Keith McCaskill is Winnipeg's new police chief. Well, hold on to your remote controls, because a big change is coming to your television sets this holiday season. I don't know if you've ever seen this Yule log on Shaw Cable Television. It's become kind of an underground favorite. It's literally just a video of a burning log. Someone puts it in, they tape it, it burns down, and then the hand comes in to change it. Well, it's getting the hook. But don't worry, the holiday favorite's being replaced with, you guessed it, a brand new log in a brand new fireplace. Now, this is serious stuff. So we invited Joanne Kelly, the host and producer of Shaw TV, to come into the studio and talk to us about it.
Hi, guys.
Morning. What's going on here?
Well, I can't believe how many people are talking about the fact we're changing the fire log. We've had the same one for 3 years, and we thought, let's tape a new one, mostly because it's a fun evening for the staff. We get together, tape the log. A lot of people love the old log.
You shoot a real... Now, this, I was told, this used to be your log.
Yeah, in a place I used to live, yeah, it was my fireplace. And now it's Kim Babbage's, one of our reporters. The new log.
Was it your hand then? Because that was the thing on Boxing
Day. No, that was
Day.
Marv Thiessen, who is our technical production supervisor.
Do you know
Shaw.
How funny it is? You'd wait for that moment. It was like the money shot. Well, there comes the hand.
And that's one of the big differences this year. We have a few hands.
No.
Different hands.
Is it a different log?
It's a different log, different fireplace, different everything, and we've got a series of hands.
And are you going to tell us who those hands are?
I can.
Who those hands belong to?
Yes. My hand is in there. Yes. Jeff Bromley, who another Shaw TV personality.
With a tattooed hand, probably.
A big leather wristband. Yes. Susie Babbage, Kim Babbage's sister. Ace Burpee. Susie Burpee, Ace's sister.
The dancer.
I can't believe Ace Burpee got his hand in
there,
and we did it.
Well, next year, we're going to open it up, I think.
Terry, we're getting our hands in the Yule log, my wives. We're going to co-hand.
We'll have to see how
together.
The phone calls go, though, because we tried to change it up the second year to a different log, and we got so many phone calls complaining that we had to put the old log back on. So we are keeping the old log in in our files so we can change it up if we have
to. Do people watch it really right to the end until the log
People have
burns
it up
down?
Pretty well 24 hours a day.
Yes.
And this, I have to say, the log we shot last night, I did not realize how difficult it is to get a log for TV. It took us hours to get it burning properly. So it doesn't actually ever die down to embers because we had such a roaring fire going.
Did you ever consider getting rid of the log altogether?
No, we love it.
Too
we
much
love
response,
it.
Right?
Too much response.
Are you shocked by how much response?
A little bit, but I do get it because I have it on the whole time.
Now, you have a lot of competition, you know. Practically everyone is selling this on DVD or on VHS. But yours seems to be the universal log that everyone turns to in times of consolation when we need to sit together in front of the fire.
I think people like the fact that it's shot locally, that it's not from some fireplace in a studio somewhere.
You know, I never knew it was shot locally. I thought, where did you get this?
Last question. We still get Christmas music in there?
Absolutely. And the crackle and the pop and Christmas music. Yes.
Love it.
And you shot it last night?
Shot it last night. And so we still need to look it over and everything and make sure it's okay.
When does it debut?
It starts December 22nd. We're going to air the Christmas parade at 6 o'clock. Right after that, the fire log, and it runs straight through to the 2nd.
I'm having a party to invite people over to see it. That's what I'm doing. I love that. Thanks, Joanne.
Thanks, guys.
That's Joanne Kelly, the host and producer of Shaw TV. The new Yule log, by the way, will start burning on our TV sets on December 22nd and keep on crackling nonstop right through to January. Well, it's a rare day in December when you can go without having to scrape the ice off of your car windows before you hit the road. The worst is when you have that thick layer of ice on the windshield. You know what I'm talking about. The scraper literally won't cut it. It just sort of scores thin lines across it and you end up being super frustrated. Well, this week I caught up with a Winnipegger who said enough is enough.
Daniel Iacobucci did more than just throw it away. He invented his own. He's the inventor of the Easy Grip Scraper, and we're going to try it this morning. And we must admit that while it is really cold out here this morning, we were having to improvise because the news Jeep is pretty warm because it was in the garage. So what did we just do, Daniel? How's it working?
Well, we had to get the cups of water, throw it on here, and believe it or not, it took about 5 minutes for the stuff to actually freeze on the van.
So shocking because it's almost, really cold.
It's almost not cold enough to get ice, if you could believe that.
You're going to be the only one that ever says that this morning. Okay, tell me a little bit about this while I give it a try because physically, it's not like any scraper I've ever seen.
It's a little bit different. It's made for getting the leverage, especially in the center of the front windshield. And it's easier on the wrist.
It's round at the end. Like you stick your arm through a round hole and then grasp the handle in the middle.
Marcy, you know what it looks like? It looks like a big pop tab. You know the ones that you pull off a pop can?
Oh, it does. It really does. The ones that you save sometimes for charity, right?
Yes. Yeah, I never thought of that, but it does for sure.
And so the idea is that when I put it on the windshield like that, I can keep even pressure across.
Yeah, it's for even pressure and it distributes the force you put with your whole arm, not just your wrist, like the conventional ice scrapers are just your wrist. And
we're moving down to the back window. Come on down here, Daniel. Now, you're not just here as an inventor. You're here as a good, hearty Manitoban. Take us back to the day you decided, I've had it. I'm throwing it all out.
Well, I had actually at that time an old pickup truck is pretty big, hard to reach the center of the windshield, and you had to almost climb on the hood to get on there. And then it just wasn't working. I got that thing, you know, to the stick with the brush. And
extender.
Right. And then you still got to use two hands, and you're leaning across, and you can't put that pressure on the center of the windshield.
And then the front of you is covered in snow.
Oh, totally. Totally covered in snow. So I thought, you know what? I have an idea. I'll try it. And about 30 different prototypes later.
30?
About 30, believe it or not, for a simple ice scraper. And
now, where are you doing this? Like in your garage? Like what were you building your prototypes out of?
At first they started with wood. And then as it went along, got scrap plastic and cut it up, glued it together and this and that to just sort of get the process on what worked best and that type of thing, and eventually came up with the final design, got the prototypes made offshore.
Well, who made them? Where?
Well, we had them made in Hong Kong. We tried like crazy to try and get a manufacturer in Winnipeg and even Toronto, Mississauga, and then eventually the States, but they didn't even want to look at it because they thought too much work, this and that, and we figured, well, you know, we're paying you guys to do this. So we ended up going offshore, and the people over there were falling over themselves to get this thing made, and they helped us quite a bit, actually.
Very cool. Brad, words this morning, but very cool.
Daniel, do you have the patent yet? Like, to invent an original ice scraper, one such as we've never had before.
Well, we do have the U.S. patent is what we do have on this. It is patented ice scraper, and it took me about 2 years to get that.
Wow, it's a long process. This works really well. I have to say, it's a really cool thing. Now, you don't have it in full marketing, which is why we as Canadians haven't seen this yet, but you have done something very seasonal. You brought a whole bunch of them in.
Yes.
Yeah, we got a few of them in here for you guys to...
We're going to give them away.
Brad, give them away. Great.
Daniel Yakabuchi drove in from Headingley this morning, says it's pretty good. And just give us the last word on your scraper here, the Easy Grip. You've had yours for how many years?
Had it for about 6 years now, and I still have the same one sitting in the car. It sits there all summer, all winter. And
you've driven over it.
Driven over it the whole bit, and it's the same one. Works like brand new still.
Well, thanks for bringing them in. Thanks for showing us this.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Only a Winnipegger gets fed up enough that they actually take the big step of inventing their own ice scraper. I love it. That's Daniel Yakabuchi who did it, the inventor of the Easy Grip ice scraper. Well, that's it for today. We're keeping it short and sweet, knowing that everyone has a lot of parties to go to, gingerbread men to make and eat, and all that shopping, of course. Well, while you're doing all of that, don't forget to check us out on the radio. We're at 89.3 FM in Winnipeg, 990 AM in southern Manitoba, and online at cbc.ca/Manitoba. And we love mail, people. I'm lonely here, so why don't you just add us to your Christmas card mail out? You can email us. Good idea, huh? manitobapodcast@cbc.ca. This episode of Manitoba This Week was released on December 15th, 2007. The podcast is produced by the very merry Ruth Shedd. I'm RC Marcusa. Talk to you next week.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.